Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Is trying to make this a case of whodunit. But for the friends and family members of Brandon McClellan, tonight they would like to present the facts and let the world decide who killed Brandon. What we know is that in the early mornings of September 16th, there was the body of Brandon McClellan found on FM 2648. We understand that one of the first persons on the scene was Mr. Chris Brooks. He works as an investigator with the Lamar County DA's office. He's a certified peace officer. And he says that on September 16, 2008, at approximately 4:25 a.m., he was dispatched to FM 2648, where they found Brandon McClellan's body. He stated in his affidavit that based on his training, his experience, and his observation of the crime scene, that he felt Brandon's body appeared to have been struck by a motor vehicle and dragged a considerable distance, where his body was finally ejected from the undercarriage of the motor vehicle and left in the middle of the roadway. Two witnesses told the Sheriff's Department at the scene that they had seen a gravel truck leaving the area. They stated that they saw the gravel truck just before they came upon the body. So the Sheriff's Department, from what we understand, went to a truck stop near, pretty near this area, and found several truck drivers there, asked around as to if anyone had been in the area and had struck anything or seen anything. And that's when they met Gary Clark, who is a gravel truck driver. And I understand that Gary Clark told them that he was driving on FM 2648 earlier that evening and had felt a bump in the road. He said that he looked back, didn't see anything, and kept going. He went a distance before he decided to pull over and inspect his truck. He claims that when he inspected his truck, he found no damage, no blood, no human tissue, or torn clothing of any type underneath or around his vehicle. So from what we understand then, that the officer then went out with Mr. Clark, and he inspected the truck. And they both together came to the same conclusion. There was no blood, there was no human tissue, there was no clothing or anything to indicate that this gravel truck had been in an accident. So about this time is when they notified the mother that her son had been, in fact, killed. And at this time, we're going to introduce the mother. We're going to introduce Mr. Jim Blackwell, Brenda Cherry, and Creola Cotton. And they're going to help us sort through what happened to Brandon McClellan that night. But we want to remind everyone that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. At this time, we're going to introduce you to Jacqueline McClellan. She's the mother of Brandon McClellan. Also, Mr. Jim Blackwell. He's with the Tarrant County LOC. We're also going to introduce you to Brenda Cherry and Creola Cotton. They are both with the Concerned Citizens for Racial Equality. Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Are you with us, Ms. McClellan?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us who came to your home that morning and told you about about Brendan's death?
Yes, it was State Trooper Stacy McNeil and Chris Brooks.
Okay, and what time was that?
When they came to my house, it was a little bit after 10 that morning.
Had anyone else been in your home that morning to tell you about what happened?
No.
So when they came to your house that morning, what exactly did they say?
They said, well, I'm sorry to inform you that your son has been killed. He's been ran over and drugged.
Okay. And so that was your first notification that he had died. But later that day, didn't someone else visit you and tell you that they – I understand that Mr. Finley and Mr. Crossley visited you later that day? Okay, I think we dropped her call by mistake. We're going to hope that she calls back in. But that's the mother of Brandon McClellan, and she's going to have to dial back in. It may take her a second to get back into the queue. But she's going to tell us what happened that morning when she was told that her son had, in fact, been found on FM 2648 near Paris, Texas. Well, I'm going to speak to Ms. Cherry now. Ms. Cherry, you have been a part of this investigation for a while yourself, and you pretty much know a lot of the details about what happened. How did the town hear about this accident or this murder?
At first, there was an article in the paper saying that there was a hit-and-run accident by an unknown driver.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw that in the paper. But a few days later, I got person came to my house and asked me if I would go over to Miss McClellan's house. She wanted to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went over there. I didn't know her. And I went over there, and she told me that she feels that her son had been murdered, and she told me who she thought had murdered him. And she said she felt that they were going to sweep it under the rug.
Okay.
And she asked me if there was anything I could do.
So that was September 16th or the 17th, right after?
It was the day before Brandon's funeral, actually, and I don't recall what day it was on.
Okay.
But it was before he was buried.
Okay. So, you know, you all, I think you were one of the people that, I think the initial the investigation had been completed, and I understand that there were many people that went to the scene of this murder, and they found all types of evidence that remained after the investigation itself. Is that the case?
That's correct.
I think we have Ms. McClellan back on the line. Ms. McClellan, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. So at what point did some young men come to your house that had been out with Shannon that night? Didn't Finley, who had been, and Crossley, who had been out with your son that night, come to your home the following day?
Yes, they came to my home, and I asked them what had happened, and only thing that they could tell me was it got out of hand. And they couldn't even look at me with a straight face when they said that.
When you heard them say things had got out of hand, did it give you an eerie feeling that they were indicating that they knew more than they were saying, or what kind of feeling did that cause for you when you heard them say that way?
At that time, I was still in a state of shock, and, I mean, I was just in disbelief, you know. Know what to really to believe. So,
okay. So this was when you speak of that. You're speaking of Shannon Finley and Ryan Crossley.
Yes.
Okay. And did they bring a young lady with them as well?
It was Ryan's girlfriend.
Okay. So three people came to your house that morning: Shannon Finley, Ryan Crossley, and Ryan Crossley's girlfriend.
Right.
Okay, and so all they told you is that things had gotten out of hand.
Right.
Okay, so then we know that that morning that they gave a statement to the police department. Shannon Finley and Ryan Crossley, I think later that day, gave simultaneous reports to the police about what happened. And per what I read on the affidavit, and Ms. Cherry, you can correct me, pretty much they say the same thing.
Pretty much, they do.
And can you kind of explain what they say happened?
They claim that they had been to a liquor store in Oklahoma. Paris is right on the border almost of Oklahoma. And so they say they went there and got some beer.
Is that your background that's giving a kickback?
It's not mine.
Okay, is it Jim Blackwell or is it Mrs.
Not mine.
Okay, Jim Blackwell, is that your background?
No.
Okay, well, it seems to stop, but go ahead. Okay, so what happened then?
Okay, so they said that they had went to the liquor store in Oklahoma, which is about, I guess, 20 miles away.
Okay.
And so that they had started back home, and that they had transmission problems.
Uh-huh.
And they went down this country road supposedly because of that. Although the liquor store is a straight shot to, back to Paris. You don't have to detour anywhere. And so, if, in my opinion, if you have car trouble, you're not going to go out of the way. You're going to try to hit home, get home, you know, so you won't be stranded. But then they claim that Brandon had a problem with Finley's driving, that he was driving erratically, and that he they got mad and that they told him to get out, or he said, "I want out," and that he got out, and then they claimed that they just left him there, and then that they went back. He got back in the truck, and they argued again, and he got out, and they drove off and left him there. That's what they both claim, and their stories are very similar.
Very similar. Mm-hmm. Too similar, almost, it would appear, in some of the statements, because a lot of times when two people have accounts, even though they may say the same thing, but they don't almost seem wordy, if you will, to the same beat. But reading the affidavits, it almost seemed like they were pretty much almost word for word in exactly what they said happened. So we know that they gave affidavits on the 16th, which was the morning, which Brandon's body was found the wee morning of the 16th, and they gave accounts pretty much that afternoon. But we do know also that there was a person by the name of James Mitchell Lester, or Laster, who on September 18th flagged down a Paris police officer and gave him an account of what happened that night. And we also know that he went and also recanted this statement again on the 22nd. So this James Mitchell Laster gave two reports to two different police agencies, one being Paris Police Department, and then another he gave on the 22nd of September 2008 to Texas Ranger Stacy McNeil. And pretty much it appears that Laster advised the officers that on the 17th, the day before he gave his statement to Paris Police Department, that he had gone to Crossley's residence, and that Crossley, I guess, had Finley at his home, and he said he spoke with Finley about what happened that night. And he stated that McClellan had argued again over Finley's driving, and supposedly, from what he states, that Finley let McClellan out on FM 2648. Then he said he later returned, but McClellan had refused to get into the truck. Laster then stated that Finley told him he initially ran over McClellan with his truck and drug him for about 40 feet down the road. He then says that he went back, Finley and Crossley, and looked at McClellan's body, and they said that the head was smashed open where you could see McClellan's brains. And I apologize for taking you back through this, Ms. McClellan, but I think only way we can get to the truth is to put it all out there. But he said that that when they looked at the body, that McClellan's brains were visible, and that his leg and arm was dismembered, and that there was a large amount of blood in the roadway. This seems consistent, if I'm not mistaken, with crime scene. Is that not correct, Ms. Cherry?
Well, yes. That although his leg, Jackie, you don't mind me talking about the condition?
No. Okay.
His head was split open with the brains out, and his there was a leg under him. It looked like it was totally dismembered, but I think some tissue still remained intact. It was still attached by some tissue, but it was under him sideways, so it looked like it was completely off. And so the description they gave is how did they know that? You know, if they weren't told that by them, that is exactly how he looked.
And then didn't we understand that Finley and Crossley had told him that he went to the, or Finley told this Laster person that Finley and Crossley went to the car wash and washed the truck after this happened? Was that not in the affidavit as well?
Well, in the affidavit, actually, that's a statement from Chris Brooks, the investigator. He said the truck looked like it had been washed and ran through high grass, high weeds.
And we do know that there was also a Ashley Finley who gave a sworn statement, and she is the estranged wife of Shannon Finley. And she stated that Josh Newkirk had told her about what Finley had said and the fact that he had killed McClellan. And basically he's told the same story that this Laster person told. Is that not correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess my question would be to Jim Blackwell, how did they know? How did they know if they were not at the crime scene, how did they know what happened?
Well, this entire thing was botched from the beginning, so we really are not going to know exactly what happened until these guys are put on trial and the truth comes out under oath. What Gary Waite wanted us to believe is that these guys cannot be responsible for this simply because both of their statements are practically the same. But we're not buying that. There is something else going on with this case that they are not being truthful with and coming forth with. So we're looking for the truth, and we're looking for it to come out possibly in a trial. So right now we don't know how these guys found out, but they must have been there, and I agree with that. But since everybody is lying and everybody is trying to run and cover themselves on this trial, on this case, then we'll probably never know exactly what happened until we have a trial.
Okay.
Can I say something quickly?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make it clear that the opinion that I give, what I say, and what Mr. Blackwell says, or what Criolla says, that's our opinions. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean Jackie has the exact same opinions.
Oh no, Ms.
Although I don't know what her opinion is, but this is what we say.
Okay. We do know that it appears that there was way too many hands on the scene, because we understand that the Sheriff's Department was involved in the investigation. We understand that the Texas Rangers branch of the Texas Department of Public Safety was in it. And then we hear, you know, at some point that this last person gave a statement to the Paris Police Department. So it seems like way too many agencies may have been involved from the beginning. Would you agree with that, Ms. Cotton?
Yes, I do. And, you know, it all came about, you know, in such a suspicious way, you know, with the fact that, you know, they didn't even want Jackie or any of the family to even see the body.
Mm.
And, you
I
know,
agree. And since you brought that up, I did speak with Leon Williams with Maxie Funeral Home down there in Paris, and I did ask him, did you advise Miss McClellan not to look at the body? And he goes, well, I didn't. I wouldn't say I advised her. I just told her that if it were me, I would not look at the body. Is that exactly what happened, Miss McClellan? Okay. Well, that's what he told me. Let's just say that. And so I do know from Brandon's cousin, who is supposed to call in this afternoon, Deborah Pierce, she said that she did look into the casket, and she stated that the body was not dressed. I'm sorry? She stated that the body was not dressed and that the body was just in a body bag. And so that may be the reason, I'm assuming, that they did not want the family to look into the casket. I'm not certain, but we do know that the family did provide clothing for the deceased, but obviously the deceased body was never dressed and just placed into the casket that way. But let's talk about Shannon Finley. Shannon Finley, from what we understand, has a lengthy criminal history. we know that he gave an affidavit, and we know that Crossley gave an affidavit stating that they were the last people to see Brandon McClellan alive. We know that they say that Brandon Finley and, I mean, I'm sorry, Shannon Finley and Brandon McClellan argued that night. So from what we understand, per Lamar County, there's only ever been three suspects. That's the Clark person, Gary Clark, the gravel truck driver, Ryan Crossley, and Shannon Finley. So at this time, we're just going to examine who is this Shannon Finley person. And we understand from looking back, he has quite a lengthy criminal history. It appears that in August of 1998, he was arrested on possession of marijuana. February of 2000, he had a marijuana possession charge. From 2001 to 2003, he was arrested for misdemeanor driving while intoxicated and for furnishing alcohol to a minor. In March 2002, he furnished alcohol to a minor. So from 98 to 2002, he'd already been arrested four times. I'm making that point to say that Texas law, typically three strikes, you're out. So, again, August 1998, February 2000, 2001 to 2003, and March of 2002, he'd been arrested four times. On August 2003, he was involved in a shooting in which he shot his best friend, Mark Sneed. He says, per the affidavits, that they were sitting in a park in Paris. What I understand is that he said that black men were about to rob them. And I understand that he said that he knew that the Sneed person kept a gun underneath the seat. Is that correct, Ms. Creola Cotton, but Ms. Cherry? Is that not correct? He said that he knew that Sneed kept a gun underneath the seat?
Well, he said that Sneed had a gun, and he said that he got the gun and that he shot at the three supposed black men. But if this is true, he fled. He left for 16 days.
But back up one second. He shot his friend twice in the side of the head and once in the back of the head, but supposedly he was shooting at the three black people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so after that shooting, he fled.
Yes.
Okay. So where did he go? Wasn't it Wichita, Kansas?
Well, no. That's where he fled to with Brandon.
Okay.
After Brandon was, in my opinion, murdered.
Okay.
But how can you shoot somebody three times in the head and from at different angles by accident? Mm. You know, that it makes no sense. But.
Okay, so we're trying to understand that if Lamar County DA's office appears to be as strict as I seem to understand that they are as toward black men, we're trying to understand then why was he not sent away for good after this shooting? Because we understand that they charged him with murder, but they I guess he pled down to manslaughter and was given 4 years. Is that correct, Mr. Blackwell?
That's correct, yeah.
So he got 3 years. I guess he served 4 years for a manslaughter charge, in which they said that the only reason that they gave him that was because he was the only person to be able to tell the story. So, therefore, to make certain that he spent some time in the pen, they just decided that manslaughter was the best that they could get on him. And that's what I read from one of your accounts in the newspaper. And so, again, the DA's office in Lamar County let this person have five convictions, and they still had not put him away and allowed him to get back on the street. And in December of 2007, he got another driving while intoxicated charge. So that would be the sixth time. And the system in Lamar County allowed this person to still remain on the street. And then in September of 2008 was when Brandon McClellan was murdered on FM 2648. And this person was one of the last people to see him alive. So my question is the DA's office in Lamar County fair in terms of the way they prosecute black people versus the way they prosecute white people? I'll pose that question to Ms. Cotton, Ms. Creola Cotton.
No, they're not fair, and I say that because I know it firsthand.
Because they
prosecuted my 14-year-old daughter, and there was a 14-year-old white girl who had committed arson, and they let her go, and she had prior offenses. And, you know, that's just one case, but we see it every day. You know, you go into court, and they try to prosecute black people to the fullest extent of the law for offenses that, you know, they should get probation. But if it's a black person versus a white person, that white person is normally going to get a whole lot less time or no time.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, the September 2008 dragging death of Brandon McClellan. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390. And again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is not open tonight. So if you have a question or a comment, call us up at 347-850-8390. I want to go here before we take the first phone call. In understanding this case, Shannon Finley and Ryan Crossley were charged with murder, if I understand this case correctly. And if I am understanding, they were charged with murder, and the case was sent to the grand jury. I understand that the grand jury found reason to indict them. And then I understand that the district attorney in Lamar County, Gary Young, said that he could not try the case because he had worked on a prior case. Can you pick up from there what happened, Ms. Cherry?
Well, yes. At first he wanted the case, but I believe that we raised a stink about it, and also I think Shannon Finley's family complained because he was his defense attorney when Shannon murdered Mark Sneed.
Okay.
And so he recused himself finally, and then he assigned his assistant, Bill Harris. But then it was turned over to Toby Shook in Dallas, the special prosecutor. He's a private attorney, though. He was brought in to prosecute the case. And then they moved it to Sulphur Springs and let them go. But if they had enough evidence to indict, they had enough evidence to move it to Sulphur Springs to prosecute it. So what happened to that evidence? All of a sudden it's gone.
Well, let me ask you this. First of all, Toby Shook is a Dallas attorney that was brought in as the special prosecutor on this case.
Yes.
I'm understanding that he told the Lamar County District Attorney's Office that he didn't feel that these guys, being Finley and Crossley, could get a fair trial in Lamar County. So is that the reason that he moved the venue from Lamar County to Hopkins County?
Well, what happened was the Paris News would write different stories about the case, but they were always sympathetic toward Finley and Crosby. It's not like they were too much of a rush to judgment. You know, they were defending them. But I think that Finley and Crosby's attorney filed for the change of venue,
mm-hmm.
but I attended that hearing, the only witness to why they should be it should be moved to Sulphur Springs was the managing editor of the Paris News, Mary Madewell. She was the only witness, and she said that it needed to be moved. They couldn't get a fair trial because of the articles in her own newspaper, you know. And so Toby Shook didn't object, so they moved it.
Okay. So, Ms. Creola Cotton, am I understanding then that they said that the grand jury had enough evidence to come to a conclusion that these guys should stand trial for murder, but, however, this special attorney, Toby Shook, that was brought in out of Dallas, I think he works for Fitzpatrick Smith, Hagoog, and O over in Dallas, that he did not find enough evidence to prosecute these guys?
Yes, that's what we were told.
And did the city buy that, or did the people, or did the citizens or community of Paris agree with that finding, or?
Well, oh, can I stop?
Sure.
What happened was they made the claim, you know, although this trucker, they knew about the trucker from day one,
mm-hmm.
and it talked to him, inspected his truck on the morning of the when the body was found. But we didn't know about that, actually, at that time. But what happened was they claimed that all of a sudden this trucker had stepped forward to say, I might have done it. But, you know, that's not true. They knew about him.
How many months later was that?
That was when they were ready to release them, after they had did the change of venue. So about 7 months.
About 7 months. So the trucker was initially basically questioned the night that it happened, but you never heard the trucker's name until 6 months later when they were about to try Finley and Crawford.
Supposedly about to try them, yes.
Supposedly about to try them. Okay, we're going to go to the phone lines. Area code 214-431. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hi, yes, it's Brother Drew Edwards with the Southern Regional Black Panther Party.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. I was just calling in, listening to the show, and I have to say hello to the family, Ms. Cherry, Ms. Cotton, Brother Blackwell. And I just thought I would add something to it. Also, you know, the racism down there in Paris, Texas, it seems like they have a strong brotherhood, because also Finley, the attorney for Finley, was also the prosecutor was also his attorney on another case. I think that might be interesting to bring that up also.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, this man been getting off of everything and everything and everything. And, you know, like I said, he never should have been out to commit a crime, because he was already, you know, on probation. And he done violated probation so many ways. He violated also when he went to Kansas City, he violated probation. So this man, that's what I'm saying, this is a strong brotherhood down there. Racism, there's initiation going on down there in Paris, Texas. And so the reason you see these brothers, I mean, these guys still running the street, is because they protected. And that's the truth. That's what I
want
to say.
But you, with the New Black Panther Party, went down there for a rally. What kind of scene was that when you all went there? How was the scene? What was the feel of the city? Because the New Black Panther Party is not part of Paris, Texas. They came in from Dallas and other areas to be a part of that rally. What was the mood of the city like when you all went in?
Well, as usual, that was not our first trip to Paris. It seemed like we live in Paris, because we always had to issue in Paris. But the particular mood for that was just the same as all. It's a racist town. They came out with the flags and
the KKK
rhetoric. Yeah, and the rhetoric, and the police was biased, and you know, that's what I'm saying. It's just like, this is our town, actually, and this is how we run it. And, you know, but that Brandon story, it did bring some national attention to the case in the town, and they try to clean the act up a little bit, I believe. But I don't live in Paris, like you said, so I don't see what happened on a daily basis. But we have. I mean, many and many and many times we've been to Paris, Texas for different issues. So I know the feel, and I know that it feels like a Gestapo to me. It feels like a town under siege when it comes to blacks. And like they said, you ain't going to get a fair trial. but whites do. Yeah, we got whites committing murders. We got whites shooting people in the head 4 times. Like you said, shooting guys in the head, getting 4 years, turn around and do another crime and another crime while all on probation. And now when you flip the script and put a black man in them shoes, we won't be seen no more. We'd be locked up for life.
And that seems to be the thing, because, I mean, in Texas, is it not 3 strikes and you're out?
Not in Paris, Texas.
For a black man, it is.
That's supposed to be the rule. Yeah, that's supposed to be the rule for everybody, but that's only the rule for us, because if you're not part of a brotherhood, you're not protected. And I'm telling you, the family and the other guy, Crosby, they're part of a brotherhood. Those guys being protected. And it was an initiation, most likely, just to prove themselves. And that's how they protect each other. Then they bring in a prosecutor from Texas that don't know, I ain't going to lose my mind, don't know nothing about the case. It was all just and then turn around, they're going to try to sue the city now, and they will get some money because it's all a game. They'll get some money because they saying their rights were violated all of a sudden, the Crosby and Finley.
Well, let me ask you something, Drew. Like I said, you're not from Paris. Is Paris the kind of town that a black person or any kind of business or anybody who wants to raise a family would want to move to?
Well, since
no.
I'm not from Paris, since I'm not from Paris, I can't really truly answer that. But, you know, we've seen a lot of, it's like Brother Blackwell just said, no. But, you know, if from my opinion, it's like I wouldn't want to live there because it's like a Gestapo. It's like it's white way and no other way. And not, you know, it ain't the right way, it's the white way. So I wouldn't want to live there, but, you know, we, you know, us blacks, we have a right to live anywhere we choose, and no one can run us out of town, but, you know, it's just not for me.
Well, would you take your restaurant for an entrepreneur or your, you know, I don't know, Jack in the Box or your, you know, shoe shop or whatever, would you take it to Paris, Texas?
I wouldn't take nothing to Paris, Texas except some ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I tell you, sister.
Okay, Mr.
Durant. Can I just interject here?
Yes, sir.
In Paris, Texas, you do have 2 sets of laws,
ooh,
and we're not sold on that, why they say that all people are treated equally, that you are presumed innocent until you're found guilty. That doesn't work in Paris, Texas. In Paris, Texas, black people are guilty until they are proven innocent. You see. Now, the reason why Crosley and Finley and all of these white boys down there can commit these crimes is just like the brother said. There is a brotherhood there, and there is only one rule, and that's the white rule. So they can twist the law any way they so desire. Because in Paris, you have a closed society. Everything they do in Paris is just like a plantation. You know, you keep it right there on the plantation. You don't let it go to other plantations where other blacks maybe get involved in this and you have an uproar. But they never wanted the Shaquanda Cotton case to get out because that's what started all this thing. That's what put the spotlight on Paris, Texas, is the Shaquanda Cotton case. But even in Paris, I must say, I'm kind of disillusioned with the black people there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the black people have an opportunity to stand up for their rights, but they will not, and that just gives the white establishment even more fire to burn our people with. So it's a combination of black folks not standing up and white folks not caring about the black at the African-American community, and they have these 2 sets of rules and laws that governs the black community. That's our issue in Paris. Gary Young is just running roughshod. He's an out-of-control individual. This man is a complete maniac, and he have absolutely no business being in that position. Because
he's speaking of Gary Young, the Lamar County District Attorney.
Yes. Grossly unprofessional, and we have documentation to show that. He does not follow the rule of law. And the judges there do not follow the rule of law, and therefore the black people are sent to these public defenders who really don't have time or the energy or the interest in defending them properly. That's why we have an issue in Paris.
Okay. Let's go back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up 972-805. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes. This is Brandon's cousin.
Hi, Ms. Pierce. How are you? This is Deborah Pierce. How are you?
Fine.
Tell us what you wanted to know about this Brandon McClellan dragging death. You said you were one of the people who got an opportunity to see the body. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
You want to tell us what you saw? I tried to describe it earlier because I wasn't sure if you were going to make it before we got off the air. Do you want to tell us what you saw when you looked, or how you, first of all, came about looking at the body, and then what you saw when you did see it?
Well, I was at the funeral home, and I asked to go back to look at his body to see, because someone had said that he was castrated. So I went back there to see if that was true. And when I went to see, I found out that his head was bashed in, like maybe a truck went across his forehead, across his eye, beside his nose, down by his lip, and across the top corner of his right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
It was all just smashed in like a smashed in basketball.
Mm.
And on his left side, lower leg, all the calf part there was all tore out. And then there was a gash up on his shoulder on the left side. And on the right side, thigh part, it was just like, just held on by the that bone that holds your hip bone and the thigh together,
mm-hmm.
leg area together. It was just held on by that. That's what I saw.
That's what you saw. And you were also one of the people that we have not established the fact that there was a crime scene that was very properly taken care of. It was never cordoned off. And we understand days and weeks later, we'll bring Drew X back in. Yourself, I think Miss Cherry, I think the mother, all went back to the crime scene at different times and collected evidence. Tell us what you collected, what you saw when you went to the crime scene, and what you collected when you were there.
Okay, I went to the crime scene several times. The first time was the day that it was told that Brandon was killed. Mm-hmm. I arrived in Paris around about, I think it was about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and we were out at the crime scene at probably 30 minutes after that, about 1:30 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went out there, there was blood on the highway, and it was like if you was drugged, if you was hung up in something, and they drug you for a bit, because there was no space in between the drop. I mean, in between the blood, it was just like a straight long line, ziggy line where something was under it. Also looked in, I seen his chains. There was chains on both sides of the road. Nickels, dimes, quarters was on both sides of the road. Like he was being chased first around and round, and then I saw where the tires came back to the pavement about on the third go-around. And that's when it looked like they must have hit him then and drug him down the street, because that's the way that the blood and everything points.
Was it you that told me that it looked like he was trying to make it to the fence?
Yeah, it looked like he was trying to run to the fence on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
And he got maybe 5 feet from that fence, and that looked like a truck by the wheels of it. The truck came in front of him and cut him off before he made it. So it looked like he ran to the other side, across the road to the other side, and was going to run to the fence on that side. And he was probably about, I think it was 8 or 9 feet away from the fence on that side. And he made another circle and ran back around the road. It looks like the way the tires overlap, and any police officer could tell that, because I'm a security officer and I know a lot of the investigation ways. And so that way I know that they could tell too. But when we went back out there, someone had went and mowed the grass down. And the beer cans that we found there, they were laying in a, they was laying like a, in an angle, you know, like describing some kind of symbol or something. But when we went back out there, they was kicked all the way around. And I had photos and all of that stuff. I have photos of all of that stuff like that. And I took photos of bone fragmentation, probably like a piece of skull with the hair still on it. I gave it to Brenda.
And Ms. Cherry, you collected evidence as well when you went to the scene, correct?
Well, yes. What we did, Creola, myself, and an attorney, we went out there and we took pictures of everything, where it lay, from different angles so you could tell where it was. And we then we had gloves on, and we put it in baggies and labeled it, and you know, because we thought it was very disrespectful to have his bones still laying out there. And surprisingly, the money was still out there. And the reason I think he was running toward the fence is because some of the money was scattered up near the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so we collected it and boxed it and stored it. But then when the Newsweek came down and New York Times came down to do a story, we told them about it and we showed them the pictures and everything, and they put it in their articles. And so from what I'm gathering, that kind of bothered Stacey McNeil, because he called me and he asked me.
Hey, Stacey McNeil is who? He's with the
Texas Rangers / Texas Department of Transportation.
Okay.
And he was one of the initial investigators, and he's the one that supposedly is still investigating this case.
Okay.
But he asked for the items, although he wouldn't be able to use them, you know, because we collected them and time had passed, so he couldn't use it as evidence. And in my opinion, he wanted it so we couldn't expose it anymore, you know.
And when did you all go out there and collect that evidence? He died on the 16th, so you all went out there when?
Oh, it was probably like 3 weeks later.
Okay.
It was quite a while later.
And so there was still evidence out there on the scene 3 weeks later?
Yes. The first, when I first went out there, I think Deborah was there and Jackie and some more of her family members. There was even what appeared to be brain matter or you know, his body tissue.
Okay.
In a spot. But by the time that, you know, we did the collection, you know, either an animal had eaten it or whatever. But I just thought that was so disrespectful to leave his body parts out there like that. How good of an investigation could you possibly have had if you didn't even collect the evidence out there?
I agree. Ms. McClellan, you yourself went to the crime scene, I understand, which had to be very difficult. What did you find when you went out there, and when did you go?
I went out there. It was with Ms. Cherry when we went out there, and we found a lot of stuff. And me and my sister LaVon and my sister-in-law, Maggie, we went out there, and that's when we were still picking up money on the side of the road and cigarette lighters that was left out there, and, you know.
Somebody mentioned to me about a bracelet. Who was that that told me it was a bracelet? Was that
there you? It was a necklace. It was a B. A B from a necklace.
Okay.
The letter B.
From a necklace.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ms. McClellan, how hard was it for you to go to that murder scene?
It was real hard for me. It was real hard for me.
So we're hearing, okay, and I'll even open up Drew X's, because before I close on this, how many people went out and collected evidence. Drew X, you said, Drew X is with the Black Panther Party. You and your group went out there, and you all found evidence as well, correct?
Yes, we did. You know, after we did our investigation, and you can see, first of all, you can see where some vehicle, not a big truck, was going off the road from one side to the next side. And on each side of those roads, we found money on this side, we found bones on this side, we found some more stuff on this side, beer cans on this side, and some more stuff on this side. So it's not conclusive in what they're saying. So we've seen that, you know, with our own eyes, took our pictures, got our own photos, our own evidence. We found, like we said, bone fragments over here in the grass and money in this side. You see what I'm saying? It's not all on the one side. It was some on this side, and like I said, it's not consistent with a person being hit by a truck, because you wouldn't be. It's a circle of motion. The grass was mowed down with the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we drew our conclusion already. I mean, you know, our conclusion had already been formed based on our evidence.
Okay. We also thank you, Drew. We also know, since we're speaking of evidence, that Finley's truck, there was a search warrant issued September 20th to search Finley's truck. We know that Finley drove a 2000 Dodge Dakota truck. For anybody who's very good with knowing what trucks look like and how high they are from the ground, it was a 2000 Dodge Dakota truck. We understand that they found that truck in a hayfield behind Finley's parents' home in Lamar County. We understand that the truck was taken to a local wrecker and placed up on a lift and to view the bottom of the truck or to inspect the bottom of the truck. And we understand that officers could tell that the truck had been washed and then drove through tall grass in an attempt to possibly remove evidence from the undercarriage. Now, this was on the 20th, so you can imagine Brandon was murdered on the 16th. So who just happened to have washed underneath their truck is very interesting that someone would have done that. But then he said that the officers did locate possible human blood on several locations underneath the truck. Then it was said that the presumptive test for human blood was done with positive results for human blood. Now, this was done on September 20th. Again, remember, Brandon was killed on September 16th, or the morning hours of September 16th. The truck was then impounded and with the Texas Department of Public Safety until the crime lab could come and inspect the vehicle. Well, we understand that on September 23rd, a criminalist from the Texas Department of Public Safety lab in Garland, Texas, came to Paris to process Finley's truck. Upon viewing the undercarriage of the truck, two separate parts of the truck contained human blood. The samples were collected for further testing. Okay, so I asked Jim Blackwell, Brenda Cherry, Crayola Kiden, even Ms. McClellan, so what are you all thinking when you hear this about the case? When you're thinking, okay, they found blood, you know, this looks like, you know, what to you when you hear this?
Well, I know is the investigator for the Lamar County, for Gary Young's office, swore that he found what tested positive for human blood. He found that. He swore that the car had been washed underneath and had been ran through a tall grass, and the truck was found out in a field in tall grass. Why would anybody do that? Why would you hide your truck out there? And the investigator swore to all those things, and I will say another thing. After they released Finley and Crosley, after Toby Shook released them, the New Black Panthers and myself, we went and met with Toby Shook.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I asked Toby Shook, I said, I want to know just two things. The affidavit that Chris Brooks swore to, is it accurate today or was it fabricated? He said everything in it was true. That's what he said. And the other thing I asked him was, right now, do you consider this a murder or do you consider this an accident by a trucker? He said it's an open murder investigation.
And what date was that? Around what time was this?
That would be, you know, like 7 months later, or maybe 8 months later. It was after they had said that, after he said he had he didn't have enough evidence to prosecute Finley and Crosley.
Okay.
So it was probably like maybe a month after that.
Can you describe the condition of Finley's truck, though? Was there not some damage done to Finley's truck?
Well, yes. His truck, the front license plate was bent in or bent out, rather, like an L, and there were dents on the hood of it. And he had to have hit something because his license plate wouldn't have been bent forward like that. And another thing, since the claim was that they had transmissions problems, why didn't the investigators check the truck to see if there was any transmission problems with it? They failed to do their job all around. They failed to do their job.
Yes, sir.
May I say that what I'm smelling here from this whole thing is conspiracy.
Mm.
And the conspiracy is to cover this up, because the first thing that they mentioned when this incident occurred is that we do not want to have another Jasper in Paris, you see.
But is it a,
you understand?
Is it a Jasper in Paris? Is this almost identical to what happened in Jasper?
The only difference between what happened in Jasper and what happened in Paris is the fact that they actually chained Brother Bird to the truck. Now, they drug this young man under the truck. One interesting thing is that they were saying that based on the how Finley's truck is built, that a body could not get stuck under there long enough for them to drag it. Well, I have to disagree, because if you're saying that the gravel truck did this damage, then it's almost impossible to get stuck under a gravel truck as high as it is off the ground, first of all. And the front of the truck is too close to the ground for you to get trapped under that way. So they come up with this cockamamie theory that maybe he was sucked under the truck when the truck passed. You see, what they're doing in Paris is they're trying to put out all of these lies just to cover themselves, because they botched this investigation from the very beginning, trying to lie to the African-American community to keep racial tensions down. But what they did is when you lie, you only add fuel to the racial tension fire. So if they came out and been honest about it and went ahead and prosecuted this case the way it should have been in the beginning, then we wouldn't be here today and everybody wouldn't be running for cover, lying on the next person, saying it's not my responsibility, but it's his. But we're going to get to the bottom of this, and I'm sure there are people out there who are as concerned as we are, and they want to get involved also, because 3 years is enough time for you to solve this crime if you had not bungled it from the beginning. So what we're looking at is a conspiracy to cover some rear ends.
Mm. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, the September 2008 dragging death of Brandon McClellan. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is down today, so if you have a question or a comment, please call in at 347-850-8390. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Area code 202-291. Good evening. You're on center stage. 202-291. Good evening. You're on center stage.
God bless
Hello?
You. God bless you. I'm on?
Yes, sir.
Dick Gregory, how are you?
Hi, Mr. Gregory. How are you? We're glad you're listening.
Good. I just thank God for a show like this and everything that's happening. First, you have to understand that this didn't just start. This has been going on. It's personal when it happens to you or when you're involved, but it happens all over the country. And they have developed skills. And just let me just thank the brother who so eloquently put forth what we're talking about, and so people can understand it, like my grandmother can understand it, and the whole thing. And so it happens all the time in Detroit, but you can win in Detroit at Lord and Taylor's. A guy and his family was shopping, and he had been in there the week before. You know, country boy, had a good business. And he came in, he bought like $3,000 worth of stuff. And he said, oh, wait, you were here last week. Well, why don't you take out a credit card, huh? just take the money back and take out the credit card. So he filled out the application. While he's doing that, his two daughters was, you know, looking through the store, and they saw this bracelet, little child's bracelet on sale. I don't know if they knew it was on sale, but they put it on, and they came, Dad, we'd like to get this here. And she said to the mother, she said, well, wait till your father finished this out, right? So they filled it out, and then he takes the stuff that he bought out to the car to bring the car up, to pick them up. By this time, the girls have forgot they put the bracelet on. So they're walking out the door, and the buzzer go off. And the store detective, the store, what do they call them, guards, grab the girl. Well, there's a natural reaction for the mother. She don't know what's going on, so she grabs the guy, and they choke her, and she's on the floor. When he come back, he go and pull the guy off the wife, and they choke him, and he die right there. Now, all the mess done broke up, but the ministers got together and called for a march on 4th of July, and we all come in. You see, the interesting thing, when you have somebody who call you that you trust, like when you called me today and told me about this,
yes, sir,
I don't have to check it out. I know your integrity. So we came in on the day after 4th of July, and it was Martin Luther King III, Al Sharpton, myself, NAACP. Now, here's how vicious it is. While we waiting for the cops to come and meet with us in this huge room, the Negro woman, who's the highest ranking cop on, so she come in. She said, "Dick, I need to talk to you and Martin and Al." She says, "We have videotapes of the whole family shoplifting, and I just want to tell you all that, so you don't get embarrassed." So we said, "Wait. We're not coming here dealing with a shoplifting, we're coming here to deal with a murder. That's two separate things." So then we met and told them the little game they played, we don't want to see no tapes or nothing. You know, that's two separate cases. Now, they start getting worried now. And so what happened is they slip word to the Detroit Free Press, that's the number one paper. They slip it to a column and say, "Look, here's what we have of this." So he runs this column. So we come back in again and have a demonstration in front of the federal court. We're going to stay all night. And one of the things we said after we read that filthy column, we said to the guy who wrote it in the Detroit Free Press, "We dealing with a murder now. Y'all want to deal with shoplifting? That's another case. So bring us the evidence, and we'll make a citizen's arrest now on this family." And then we talked about suing the paper. I want y'all to hear this good. Then the paper realized they was in trouble, and they started saying, "Well, he's a column with it. He just writes. No. This is what's in the paper, and my grandmother read this, she'll believe it." And then they had to come out and realize that all this was a lie. And I'm telling you this because here's how they set you up. And found out all of it was a lie. The guy got fired. The Free Press apologized. And they end up settling that case, I think, for like $15 million. I want you to hear this now. Another incident. I want you to see how tricky it is so you know what you're up against. Not to be afraid. So now there was a case of a young lady in Riverside, California. That's like 90 miles outside of Detroit. So we all go in. She's killed. A cop shoots her in the head 19 times. But thank God, before it happened, that she was an epileptic, and she felt this epileptic fit coming on, seizure, right? So she got out the car and flagged down a car, which happened to have been a white man. And he came over and said, "Excuse me, sir, I'm an epileptic, and I don't have no medicine with me, and I'm about to have a seizure. And I wonder if you would take my nephew to my mother and tell her where I am." And so he said, "Sure." So he locked the door and got in the car. By the time the mother got there with the guy and she thanked him, she drove, and the car is locked, and she's just into this, and she's out. So if you don't, you know, wake up folks with a seizure, they can bite their tongue off. So the mother called the police. The police came and beat on the window, and they ended up shooting through that window and shot her in the head like 19 times. Now, here's what they said. They said, well, when we got there, she looked kind of dazed, and she looked like she was on drugs or something. And she pulled this gun out and fired at us. Well, that was a blessing from God. And so now the mother, can you imagine a mother not only having a tragedy, but she's the one that called the police. And so what happened is some cops carried this extra gun with them to throw in the car. And had he not said she fired at us, found out the gun didn't have a pin in it. Now, if he would have just said she pointed the gun at me, right, that would have been a different story. He said she fired. And so what happened is they found out later that one guy was celebrating his birthday party on duty. And so they was at this bar drinking. The women was there and the whole game. And they was mad when they got there that this black woman interrupt our party. The punishment for that, we will shoot you dead. They drunk. Now, when the thing come down, they have to take a urine test. Well, the one whose birthday it was, who was super drunk, they claim that his urine test was dropped and wasted. And so we kept digging and kept digging and kept laying the pressure on that eventually they had to admit what it was and what had happened. And I think they settled that one for like $13,000. But when you think about the disgrace that a mother has, that the whole community is led to believe that she fired. Now, mama know it didn't happen. And so the famous case, which is so outraged, in Atlanta, you got a black mayor, black police chief. In Atlanta, these two white cops go in the wrong house and kick the door in and kill this 92-year-old black mother, grandmother. And then they said, oh, man, we really messed up. So they go leave and go and wake a black drug dealer up and say, look, man, we really effed up, man. We killed the wrong person, but we need you to say you have bought drugs from this woman. And they did. So the next day you see the headlines. You know, everybody in the black community know damn good well if she was a drug pusher, she ain't pushing drugs at 92. So what happened is the black woman, I've always said the strongest two forces in the history of the black woman and the black, her daughter and the minister went to talk to him. And he told the truth. And then everybody was embarrassed, the black mayor, because they started with the cops, the black police chief. And so this happens all over the country. But just thank God we have some voices now, like a show like this, where you can get this out. And then I'll have some other people, you know, get in touch and put it out there. One of the problems we have is a lot of people is so emotional when they talk about it that it messes. You got an audience there, and radio, this is theater, you know, and you have an audience there, and when the people hear the facts, okay, hear the facts. And so I think, you know, there's a couple other shows you all should be on. And then what we'll do is start a caravan of people calling Holder, you know, calling him and putting pressure down and saying that this is what have happened, and we just outraged. We need a thorough investigation. And so again, you know, I'm just tickled to death and thrilled that. And remember, they listening to you, yeah? And they are shaking now because they never knew it was going this far. They just thought they were dealing with some local folks, huh? And we can shut this down. But then you ask questions where the world can hear questions. Wait a minute, why? And then I think this show y'all should put on YouTube, mm-hmm. Okay? Put it up there where people can hit it and say, you know, tune into this here. Once it gets out the box, it's a different ball game. And so, brother, I just thank you. And this is the family that have to go through this. It's a hell of a thing knowing a child of yours didn't do something. Mm-hmm. And then all of them gang up on them. And and frame up on it. My son at one time was the financial analyst for the city of New York. He couldn't tell white folks how to spend $35 billion, but they couldn't touch it till he analyzed it. And he was so good, he went to Albany and begged for the budget. That's how good he was. And the police budget, all the budgets, and that Riddick Bowe Galata fight in New York that broke into a riot. I'm in Paris, and I'm looking. I said, that looks like my son getting beat up. I called my wife. I said, I think your son is getting a hell of a whooping on worldwide TV. And she passed. No, cool it. Let me call you back when you settle down. And one of his classmates at Phillips Academy, when he went to Phillips Academy, was in Tokyo and saw it and called Leo. And then when I called back, now, to make a long story short, here's a black man that determined the budget for the New York police. When they saw him, they just saw nigger. They didn't see this brilliant genius. And when we all came in there, I didn't know what my other son was saying. I got one son, anything the police say he did, he probably did. we tell him when he leave the house, put your bail money in your pocket. And we get there and find out both of them had got arrested. And then when they got ready to make a deal, the guy said, look, I've been a cop for years. I never thought I'd have to see the day I have to go against my men in blue. He said, but I know Yohante. I know him. And so then they tried to get a settlement. And he said, no, that one son over there, you give him a six-pack and a pizza, and he probably settled. But this one here, he said, well, you can't win it. And my son said, I'm not trying to win it. I'm just trying to let them know that you can't do this. And so it happens all over. And then one day, when all these so-called caring Americans with their tight budgets, do you know there's five cities in America that every two or three years they pay out $2.5 billion settling police brutality cases? Mm-hmm. Out of court, the cops don't pay nothing. And so one day these folks find out how much money it costs. And then it would be a whole new ball game. But I just thank you for putting the time and energy in and staying with it.
Mr. Morgan, let me ask you to do one thing, because I saw something in this story that I didn't see in the Scott Sisters story when we talked to the Scott Sisters. I think that, and Ms. McClellan, forgive me for saying this, but this is just my observation, that she's grieving so much. And you told the Scott Sisters something that I hope that you will say to Ms. McClellan about forgiveness, because explain what you told her about what non-forgiveness does to you.
I don't remember that. You have to tell me.
Okay. Well, then, Mr. Dick Gregory told the Scott Sisters that he asked them, were they holding any animosity against the state of Mississippi for what they had been through and for those 16 years. But you said that if they allow anger and hatred to fester inside them, that it hurts them a whole lot more.
Yeah, okay. Now, let me just explain this to you how it works.
Okay.
More people die in America from lung cancer, from grief, than smoking cigarettes. Okay? Coretta Scott King, I knew her well. The last 12 years of her life, she wasn't only a vegetarian and didn't eat dairy or nothing. She never ate cooked food the last 12 years of her life. What did she die from? Grief. You remember when I was a little boy and y'all was little, you hear the old folks say, she's just grieving herself to death, huh? Grief will kill you. It poisons the whole system. I grew up where I thought it was godly. It's a violation of God. You remember Christopher Reeve, what the guy that played Superman? You remember when he had the accident and was paralyzed and he died 18 months later? His wife died from lung cancer. And everybody said, well, she never smoked. Grief. So you can't hold it. You have to let it out. And some people have to go get drugs and all kinds of stuff. That's a weird way to let it out. But you have to go, especially if you locked into some kind of God. And so when you stop and think, now let me show you what hatred and meanness do. If you had a well in front of your house, and for 100 miles around, that's where everybody come and got their drinking water. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And if I come there one night and poison that well, and then fix it where we put a little system together where we can keep on poisoning it, That means everybody come and drink from that well. What happens to them?
It's going to be poison.
And they die, right?
Right.
Okay, if you ball your fists up, that's what your heart looks like in your chest. Huh? Now, when you open up your hand and look at your hand and see those fingers, those are the extensions to your heart. Now, let me tell you where that heart come from. It didn't come from Jesus. It didn't come from Christianity. It didn't come from the Vatican. It didn't come from Muhammad or Allah. That heart was there before there was religion. That comes from the same God, the universal force that put this whole planet together and can tell you how many grains of sand is on this planet. That's who it came from. Now, if you take both your hands and put them together, it's like if you could open up your heart, that's what it would look like. Now, remember what we did to your well? What did we do to your well? We poisoned it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that blood comes into your heart and goes to every spot of your body. They can do electronic investigation now and find out that the blood even go down into your eyelashes, right? To your body. Now, you have... You have 100,000 miles of blood vessels in your body. That's when there's no debate about God. 100,000 miles of blood vessels in your body that don't get in the way. And that blood makes a complete cycle every 30 seconds, which means your blood is traveling 200,000 miles a minute. And they got us believing a jet plane is fast, right? Now, here's why I'm telling you this here. Just like that water you get from the well, this is the well. Your heart is the well for your blood to go to every part in your body. Now, when you put in hatred, meanness, bitterness, it go to every part of your body. And if I do something to you and you hate me, it don't bother me. It bothers you. I had a friend of mine, Adam Bourgeois, told me about 50 years ago, he said 60 years ago, it would have been 60 years now, he said a priest told me, if somebody wipe your whole family out, do not go home and get a gun and come back and wipe them out. Just pray to God that they can be addicted to gambling. And I didn't understand what it means until I started getting around folks that's addicted to gambling. There is no addiction. Y'all folks think about alcohol and these folks hooked to drugs. No. And so, again, this is what King and them was talking about. This is what all your literature you read, it talks about forgiveness. I never understood why I'm reading something say, love your enemy. They say, love my mama.
Mm-hmm.
Pray for those that despise you, because they was telling you, you don't hate your mama, and she's not your enemy, but she is. Pray for her, because it purifies your system. The arthritis and the rheumatism, and black folks are going through all these changes. It's the white racist system that we angry. We're not going to do nothing about it. We're going to be angry. And so you got black folks that's 12% of America's population. And as we talk tonight, about 87% of everybody that should be on kidney dialysis machines is black folks. What's that? We're not releasing. We're a white racist hateful system. And we internalize it, and you can't say it's a black thing because they don't have kidney dialysis machines in Africa. They're too poor. They don't need them. Black men is 4% of America's population. 82% of prostate cancer death is black men, and it ain't a black thing. They not have that in Africa. You say, well, because you black men don't get checked. Well, where's that hillbilly that can't read and can't write, huh? With no education, living in a trailer with his wife. Where did he get examined? And so when we realize that all of this stuff are putting it in us and eternalizing, and not saying nothing downtown when they insult you, but come home. I remember black men come home and talk with a different voice, because when you go to work back then, I'd be 80 years old, and when you go to work, they reduce you to a boy, and when you come home, you want to get your manhood. And so you have no choice. You have no choice but to release it. To release it. Because even when you explain it to people with anger, they pick up that angry vibration and they don't even sit there and hear the facts. That's why you don't want no doctor that's a brain surgeon, that somebody hit you in your head and fractured your skull, and you don't want your son or your daughter or your husband that's a brilliant man to operate on you with them emotions, because it don't work. but listening to the show tonight, you know, this is where you have an outlet now. And you might not be able to throw it off. You got to go and fast and get on your knees and get up and just go walk by yourself until you throw it off.
Yeah.
And I tell people, you know, if you come home and find your brother in bed with your wife, don't call somebody that found their brother in bed. They'll tell you, kill them. Find somebody been married 100 years, and they will, you never go to your counterpart. And try to, because they might not be able to deal with it, and they just help you flame that hate. So, and to you, sister, I just thank you for this type of show.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory. Ladies and gentlemen, that was civil rights activist, comedian, and diet guru, Mr. Dick Gregory. Thank you, Mr. Gregory, for calling in tonight.
Good, it's my
pleasure.
We're
going to play catch up, y'all, but I had to let the wisdom go forth. Let's go back to where we are in terms of the evidence. So I think the last thing we spoke on was the fact that the truck had dents on it, if I'm not mistaken. Was that right, Ms. Cherry?
Yes, it had dents on the hood.
Okay, and was that not something, was the license plate not dented?
The license plate was bent forward into an L shape. One side of it was still intact, then the other side was bent completely forward.
Okay. Let's also deal with the fact that the gravel truck driver was given immunity. To come forth and say what?
Well, he was given immunity from his anything he said. It couldn't be used against him.
Now, why would, if he could have possibly had something to do with it, Jim Blackwell, why would they give him immunity? Jim Blackwell.
Yes.
Why would they give?
Why would they give him immunity?
Right.
Because they had to have something in order to establish the fact that they don't have enough evidence to prosecute these guys, you see. And by him coming forward, that distract from the actual case itself. Because now people are saying, and when they put this, believe me, when they put this out here about this gravel truck driver, mm-hmm. all the black folks, nearly all the black folks in Paris agreed that that could have happened. But they don't understand how these people will lie in order to cover themselves. So when we get all of these lies together, they don't add up.
Well, let me ask something about the gravel truck driver. I understand that there was a case in Paris where a Christina Williams was accused of a hit and run, and they did not give her immunity. Is that not correct, Ms. Cherry?
Well, with Christina, they vigorously prosecuted her. Gary Young, he was really vigorous with that. And her story was the same as the trucker. She said that she was driving and she felt some kind of swish on the side of her car, and she didn't see anything, and she went on to work. And but in her case, I went to the trial. You know, a man walked into the side of her car.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he didn't get killed, but they were determined to prosecute that case. So why not the trucker, if they really believe the trucker did it? No trucker came forward. They knew about the trucker from day one. So that was, and they put it out there like that, like suddenly they found this trucker. That didn't happen. But what that did for them was that put a stop to everything, because, you know, initially I believed it, you know, because, you know, they're putting it in the paper that this happened, but it didn't happen. They knew about the trucker from day one. They searched his truck from day one, inspected his truck from day one. So why 7 months later? A trucker has come forward. It was just to put an end to us complaining and us questioning what happened.
Because I guess if we're establishing the fact that we believe that the body was drugged and hit and drugged, as Chris Brooks, the certified peace officer / investigator for the Lamar County District Attorney's Office, say it, then this gravel truck driver couldn't have possibly just hit a bump if the body was drugged. So I guess given this driver immunity, in my opinion, seems like, why would you do that? Because you would think that he would hold some responsibility for the death of Brandon McClellan.
Let me say this. Brandon's – I'm sorry, go ahead.
What they thought, and basically what they were thinking, is that the African-American community, they can sell them anything and they'll buy anything. But when they saw that this wasn't flying, then they came up with another twist to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask Ms. McClellan about Brandon. First of all, we never established who was Brandon. We understand that Brandon was your only child. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And how big was Brandon? We understand that they called Brandon Big Boy. How big was Big Boy? Are we talking 200, 250, 300? How big was Big Boy?
No, he was 220.
He was 220.
Okay. Yes.
So for those of us who can kind of imagine what 220 looks like, it's kind of impossible, I would think, to hit 220 of anything, human or anything, and not know, that you hit it. That wouldn't just be a bump in the road, I wouldn't think.
Right.
Okay. So.
Exactly.
And what?
I said exactly. It wouldn't.
Okay, so I guess I'm just really trying to understand, because I've never been to Paris. I've never been to Lamar County, so I'm trying to understand what type of town this is. And one of the things that I heard about this community that shocked me most was that the night that they discovered Brandon's body, they contacted Gene Roden and Son's funeral home, and they said that Gene Roden came to the crime scene, looked at the body, and says, "Oh no, he's black. That's not for me. That's for Maxie Funeral Home. So call Leon Williams." Ms. Cotton, did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So that is true. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of hard
true.
To say race relations are real good in a town where a white funeral director will come to the scene and look at a body and immediately say, "Well, that one's not mine," call the black funeral director. So that was like one of the most shocking things that I had.
Well, can I say this? This is a town where a plant had nooses, the word nigger written everywhere. That's the way it is here. And then when, and the city officials defend that. They defend nooses and all of that. So it's not surprising that, you have your separate funeral homes and that the white one, that's a black one and we're white and we don't deal with that. That's Paris. That's the way it is, and that's the way it's always been.
Okay, let's go to the special prosecutor, this DA, this special prosecutor Toby Brooks that was brought in from Dallas County. Let's establish what is it that he didn't see enough evidence to prosecute these two persons, Finley and Crossley, that the grand jury saw. What evidence was presented to the grand jury? Has that ever been established that caused them to say, okay, we can indict these two people, but yet the special prosecutor, Mr. Toby Brooks, a private attorney in Dallas, would say that there was not enough evidence to prosecute?
It's Toby Shook.
Toby Shook. I'm sorry,
yes.
What did I call him?
As far as I know, they indicted based on Chris Brooks, the Lamar County DA's investigator, what he said in the affidavit and what he claimed he found. And that's how they got the indictment. And like I said, Toby Shook said that everything in that affidavit is correct. So that if everything in that affidavit is correct, then they had enough evidence to go forward. I've seen them prosecute cases with no evidence at all if it's a black man. So they could have went forward with that had they wanted to.
Mm. So, Mr. Blackwell, are you all asking Toby Shook to step down?
At this moment, we are asking everybody to come forward with whatever information they have. Now, let me say this. Like I said, in November, we took our case to the state attorney general. We want everybody involved. And by the way, on March 14th, of this year, we took it to the FBI here in Dallas. But our point is we want everybody that was involved in this case, in this investigation, no one is excluded. We want every one of them investigated so that they can come out and tell us why they made the decision that they did. Why
let's establish some of those names. That would be Stacy McNeil. He's with the Texas Ranger Division of the Texas Department of Public Safety. We're talking about Special Prosecutor Toby Shook. We're talking about the Lamar County District Attorney Gary Young. Who else are we talking about?
The Police Department, the Sheriff Department.
Okay.
It could reach the Dallas District Attorney's Office because they had two persons in that office working with Shook on this case. We want everybody involved investigated because we feel this is a conspiracy and that they are just trying to cover this up and they do not want to put this case out there for what it was, and that's a hate crime murder.
So, Mr. Shook, by the way, Toby Shook, I don't understand. Do you all feel that he was brought in just so he would appear that he wasn't biased, but at the same time you feel like he was part of the problem in this whole thing?
Here's what I think. I think they brought him in so it wouldn't look like it's Lamar County that's doing this. And because they had already decided they were going to let him go. So bring in Toby Shook, and then you move it to another county, and because that's what they'll say. That was Hopkins County. But you asked Mr. Blackwell if he thought Mr. Shook should step down. I say he needs to step down because right now what's happened is anytime you try to get any kind of information, they point you to Shook. But Shook doesn't have the case. He was only brought in as a special prosecutor. Gary Young, who's the DA, and Bill Harris, who was also supposed to prosecute the case originally, they have signed sworn affidavits saying that they don't have any records at all, not a single page in their office. How can you have a murder investigation in Lamar County? We only have one prosecutor's office, and then they say they have no records.
Okay, I checked on that this week, and I spoke with Toby Shook personally, and I asked Toby Shook, are you telling me that you're on permanent retainer from Lamar County pertaining to this case? And I was told that he said that this was currently considered an open investigation with the Department of Public Safety. So he said that, per his understanding, that when they found more evidence, he would still be prosecuting this file. Or this case. So that's what.
Well, we don't trust that.
Okay.
We certainly don't trust that.
It's been two and a half years.
What?
When they find more evidence, where are they going to find it from?
And who
they're going to go back out to the scene and find something else? It's not going to happen. This is swept under the rug. And we need for somebody outside of Paris, we need for Eric Holder's office to come down here and investigate this.
Maybe people should call Toby Shook. He works for Fitzpatrick, Hagood, Smith, and Ull in Dallas. And maybe you all should call him and ask him some more questions. Maybe someone should pose the same questions to him that I did. But those were the answers that I was given, that he per his understanding, will pick up the investigation when more evidence comes across his desk. His number, if anybody's interested, is 214-504-1133. But that's what he told me. And I did speak with the Department of Public Safety about the investigation and asked them could they give us any updates as to what the status of the investigation was. And all I was told by a Lieutenant William Benny was that, and he is the supervisor of Stacy McNeil, who was the lead investigator on this particular case, and he was basically his statement to me was it's an ongoing investigation, and they could not make any statements. So where are the two suspects? Where are the two men that were indicted today? Where is Shannon Finley, and where is Ryan Crossley today?
Shannon Finley is in prison for a DWI.
Now, Shannon Finley was the actual driver of the truck that night. That he was was one of the three that was with McClellan the last time someone saw him alive, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so Finley today is for what?
For DWI and I believe furnishing alcohol to a minor. He was given 17 years.
So they gave Finley 17 years for a DUI and giving alcohol to a minor or furnishing alcohol to a minor, but he did not stand trial for McClellan's death.
No, and he was only given 4 years for his first murder. So he got more years for being drunk than he did for killing somebody.
DWI is more powerful than killing a person on the white people's side.
Okay. That's one way of putting it. Where's Cross today? Where's the person, the passenger in the vehicle that was the third person in the vehicle? Where is he at today?
Crossley still lives in Lamar County.
Okay. Anybody heard from him recently?
I haven't. The only thing I heard was that he was going through a depression and suicidal. If that's correct, I don't know because naturally I don't talk to him, but that's what I was told.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, the September 2008 dragging death of Brandon McClellan. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390 and, again, press 1. Ms. McClellan, let me ask you to tell us about the conversation that you and I had this week. First of all, we want to make it clear so, you know, somebody doesn't come back later and say, well, she didn't put out all the facts. You currently have a civil suit against the gravel truck company that they say hit Brandon. But what you said to me was it's not about the money. Can you explain that?
No, it's not about the money. The main thing is what I want is justice to be served right for whoever is responsible for it. You know, just like I told you before, I ain't really never had no lot of money, and no amount of money that they try to give me is not going to bring my son back. The main thing I want is justice.
Okay, and I think that sounds like the way a real mother would feel about the situation. Money cannot bring Brandon back. One thing we never established is what type of person was Brandon?
He was a loving, caring person. He was very outgoing. When I got down to the point where I just couldn't, you know, do too much for myself, he was always helping me and my mom out. He wasn't a bad person at all.
Okay. Deborah Pierce, do you want to tell us what kind of cousin Brandon was? I'm sorry, I got to open. I think she dropped off and came back. Deborah Pierce.
I hung out with them at the time and said that Brandon was a big teddy bear. Anytime the boys would want to fight them, Brandon would always step in and say, hey, man, don't hit her. She's a female. Don't do that. So, you know, that shows right there that he was a caring person and he wasn't about a lot of violence.
Okay. Let me ask you from a relative standpoint, how badly do you think the investigation has hurt this, the fact that no one has been brought to trial yet? How badly do you think the early days of this investigation hurt things?
Well, I think it hurt a lot because I look back and I see my mom, she still think about Brandon all the time. And then his grandmother, she died here recently, and I think what took her to her grave was Brandon, because you could just mention the name of Brandon and she just started crying.
Damn.
You know. And since the investigation didn't turn out to be what everyone was thinking it was going to be, well, thinking that, you know, those two guys that ran over, Crosley and Finley. And since that didn't happen, it's just been hard for the family. And then it takes a big hold on Jackie also, because the shape that she's in now, she has no help. Her son is gone. you know, 10 years from now, she's still by herself.
So do you feel that they gave Shannon Finley 17 years on the DUI because they get him on Brandon's case, or why do you think 17 years seems like an odd number for a DUI to me? I don't know.
17 years for a DUI is a long time, and in my whole career I haven't seen anybody get 17 years unless they have a DUI and they hit somebody. You know, but what I think is they're just trying to get, he's caused, there's a lot of problems being caused, and he keeps getting in trouble. So they figure, oh, since he messed up again, they can easily slide him out of town, put him in a cell somewhere, and let this all die down. Hopefully the case be solved. They hope that it'll be solved then sometime or another, and maybe in 5 years he'll be home.
Okay.
Well, can I say something about that?
Okay.
I think after Finley and Crosley were released, they filed a lawsuit against Gary Young, Stacey McNeil, Toby Shook, Lamar County, suing them for arresting them. And so it's very convenient now that that he's got 17 years. So there goes his lawsuit pretty much.
You say there goes the lawsuit.
Well,
you mean what by that?
Well, I mean, I don't think he's going to be able to effectively work a lawsuit against the county, or Gary Young or Toby Shook, if he's in prison. It's going to make it more difficult. With, not that I think that he had a case anyway, because no matter how you look at it, he took Brandon out there.
Mm-hmm.
He took him out there. And it ended. And then for Lamar County to say, oh, that was his friend.
Well, let me jump in here. When you say out there, for those people that may not be familiar with FM 2648, what is FM 2648?
It's a country road, and it's about 19. Where his body was found is about 19 miles away from Paris. It's a secluded area with nothing around. So, and Brandon's body was found around 4 in the morning, 4 or 5. And so no friend will take you out, even if you were to believe Shannon Finley's version, no friend would take you out to that area 19 miles away from home and just leave you out there.
Mm-hmm.
So
that doesn't add up.
And
okay.
There's no lights, no traffic lights, nothing on that road. It's just a dark highway.
Okay, let's go back to the to the evidence 1 second more. I don't know if we ever made it clear. All of this evidence was found pertaining to human blood, and they thought that it was human tissue and all of this underneath the car initially. How did the investigation change to the fact that it's not, or that wasn't used? Was that never tested properly? What happened? Where did the ball get dropped as far as the blood that was on the truck? Or underneath the truck?
Well, I don't know, because since it's such a big secret, you can't get any answers. If you go and try to get any information, Lamar County will lead you to Toby Shook, and then Toby Shook will lead you to Stacey McNeil, and then Stacey McNeil, it's an investigation. I can't talk about it. So there's no way to get any information.
Hmm.
Seems like they're just passing the ball around.
Okay, so you all have gone from agency to agency, from Toby Shook to Lamar County, well, Toby Shook being the special prosecutor, to Gary Young, the Lamar County district attorney, to the Texas Department of Public Safety, and everybody's just kind of saying, go this way, go that way, go, you know, is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Hmm. And so how
and
long has this been going on?
Well, since
Finley
and Crosley were released by Toby Shook.
So that's when people start to ask questions like, what's wrong with this picture? Why did you let the two guys, you know, these two young men go? And that's when the runaround began.
Well, yeah, the few of us that question it, most people were satisfied when they made the claim that a trucker had suddenly stepped forward. Because I was surprised that you had, like the Associated Press, you know, why wouldn't you say, well, show me some proof or something, this trucker suddenly came forward. I'd want to go talk to the trucker or something. But And then that turned out to be not true. A trucker didn't step forward. They knew about him from day one. And so now it's just a secret. It's like even Jackie can't get any information. That's his mother.
And that's
he
her
can't
own
get
son.
Any information.
Let's talk about the getting information. This week I asked for the crime scene photos, any evidence, you know, any information in terms of autopsies or anything, and I was told from Toby Shook, the special prosecutor, Gary Young's office, who is the Lamar County District Attorney, the Texas Department of Public Safety. Wow. Every place I went to said it's an open investigation, so, you know, basically I can't help you. And I will
say
that.
Well, that's a joke.
It is a joke. And I will say concerning the person that's handling the civil case, Gary Wade. Gary Wade asked me this very question, which was the reason why I opened the show with the whodunit. Gary Wade asked me whodunit when I told him that we were going to do the show today. So I think that's the general the feeling of the whole investigation to me. Everybody in Lamar County has treated this like a whodunit. So they've kind
of...
Yes, sir.
And may I say that's exactly why we have taken this to the Attorney General and the FBI, is because of the fact that we cannot get any cooperation from any of these people who are involved in this case. And that's the only way that we see that we can make any progress. We had to go outside of Paris. It just wasn't working there. That society is too close and too close-knit, and they all sleep in the same bed together. So we weren't getting any cooperation there, and that's why we went outside, and that's why we're going to continue to go outside, and that's why we thank you so much for getting this information across the country, so that people can see what we have gone through here in Texas in this racist society.
Okay. Also, we want to put out numbers now. So anyone who wants to get involved, because one thing we want to establish, Ms. McClellan just wants justice for her son. She's not asking anybody for any donations or any handouts. All she's asking for is for your help. So if anybody can make some phone calls, get on the phone and call Greg Abbott. He's the Attorney General for Texas. His number is 512-463-2100. That's Greg Abbott, the Attorney General of Texas, at 512-463-2100. Also call Eric Holder. He's the U.S. Attorney General up in Washington. His number is 202-514-2000. Again, that's Eric Holder, the U.S. Attorney General, at 202-514-2000. Get on the phone and call Toby Shook, the special prosecutor in this case. If he's not going to work it right, ask him to step down. If he doesn't find enough evidence or he doesn't see that there's enough evidence to prosecute this file, why doesn't he just remove himself from the case and allow someone who does have the experience and the expertise to come in and prosecute the case? Toby Shook's number is 877-516-0277. Again, Toby Shook's number, he's a special prosecutor in this case, is 877-516-0277. His email is tshook, S-H-O-O-K, at fhsulaw.com. Also, get on the phone and call Gary Young. He's the Lamar County District Attorney. His number is 903-737-2458. His email is gyoung@co.lamar.tx.us. And also call Major Wells. He's with the Texas Department of Public Safety. He is the supervisor. He's a supervisor of Stacey McNeil's supervisor. So get on the phone and call these people at 214-861-2000. Again, that's Major Wells with the Texas Department of Public Safety at 214-861-2000. These numbers are going to be in our podcast, so you can go back and listen to this podcast again to get these numbers if you didn't catch them the first time, because I think only with them realizing that people are not going to go away, that we're going to continue to ask questions, and we're going to keep on until some justice comes for Brandon McClellan, because that's all. Ms. McClellan, tell them, what do you want them to do to help you? Jackie McClellan. Tell them what you want them to do to help you.
just to get the real truth out.
Okay. Are you asking them to help write letters and send emails and make phone calls?
Yes.
Okay. So they're listening. You might want to ask yourself, do you want to tell them anything special? We're down to our last 5 minutes.
Just help support the family in any way that they can.
So you want them to write these people that I mentioned?
I believe what she's saying is anyone that would like to, please write letters to your congressmen and let us see if we can solve this murder investigation. But since the police can't do it, maybe we can get it through the radio stations and TV networks and all that, and anybody can help in solving this investigation.
Thank you, Deborah, for explaining that. Friday night, we're going to be talking about Bobby Yates. Can you tell us, Ms. Cherry, just very quickly what that case is all about?
Bobby Yates is an individual who had no criminal record at all. He is in a wheelchair. He has no lower body at all.
At all.
A woman came to his house with two men and knocked on his door around 2 in the morning. He let them in. He called 911 after a while. I got a copy of 911 tape where he's begging the police to come help him. They assaulted him, tried to get money out of him. But then when he called the police, they claimed, well, he touched the woman, or girl, rather, and she was 16. And so they arrested him and charged him with a sexual assault, whereas this woman was there with him, drugged up with two men. They never left, and he's the one. In the police report, they wrote down that the girl called the police, which is a total lie, and his attorney refuses to. Bobby, he has no sex organs, and it's impossible for Bobby to have done what he's accused of doing. And in his lawyer, he has a court-appointed attorney. He refuses to hire any expert witnesses for Bobby. He refuses to do anything. He has an upcoming trial on the 23rd, and they're trying to force him to plead guilty.
Okay.
And he has no attorney,
okay. Basically. We're going to talk about that Friday night. And on Saturday, that's Friday night from 7 to 9, we're going to be talking about the Bobby Yates case. And then on Saturday, we're going to talk to Mr. Dick Gregory, who was with us tonight. We're going to talk with him Saturday from 3 to 5. So if you've got questions about civil rights issues, Dick Gregory is the man to talk to. So that's going to be Saturday from 3 to 5. I'd like to say thank you all so much for tuning in tonight. We hope that this broadcast will help in some small way to get some justice for Brandon McClellan. We're asking again that everybody get on the phone, call Greg Abbott, call Eric Holder, Toby Shook, Gary Young, Major Wells, and just tell them that you want justice for Brandon McClellan. Again, Greg Abbott is 512-463-2100. Eric Holder is 202-514-2000. Toby Shook is 877-516-0277. Gary Young is 903-737-2458. And Major Wells with the Texas Department of Public Safety, who's covering and handling this investigation, is 214-861-2000. Does anybody have any final thoughts that they want to, Miss Cherry?
I just want to say that the investigation done regarding Brandon McClellan's death was it was a Barney Fife investigation, and we need somebody that's really going to come down and see what happened to Brandon.
Mr. Blackwell.
I would just like to say in closing, of course, we thank you very much, but I would like to appeal to any attorney or law firm out there that has heard this case, this information, and would like to help, just contact Jackie or Miss Cherry, because we have to go outside of Paris. We cannot get any satisfaction in that town.
Okay. Jackie McClellan, you have any final statement?
Yes. Yeah, how long does it take?
I'm sorry? Okay. We can't hear you, Miss McClellan. Say what?
Do what now?
We were just giving you a final comment. Do you have a final comment?
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right. On behalf of the Brandon McClellan family, we're hoping that everyone heard us tonight and they will reach out and try to help. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.